This is a very serious podcast.
Make sure our hair doesn't look completely insane.
How does it look?
I think it looks fine. It looks suitably poofy.
Okay.
Whenever you're ready.
Recording right now?
Yeah. I always start it like a minute before we're going to do it. Just in case you do something amusing.
Oh, like in the beginning of it. Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay, here we go.
I hope I can get through this.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
Splanknik's The Final Frontier.
Oh my gosh.
It's ongoing multi-year mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life forms and new forms of amusement, to boldly go where no Splanknik has gone before.
I'm so embarrassed, I'm crying.
You want me to do it again?
We're keeping it.
keep the part where you say, I'm so embarrassed, I'm crying. But I'm like... All right.
Okay.
You got to keep all of this.
Yeah, I think I will. I think
Welcome
I will.
Welcome to Splanknik's. This is going to be fascinating.
Uh-huh.
And we'll be back at warp speed.
That was better. God. That was good.
All right.
Okay.
Welcome to Splanknik's, the Society for the Preservation of Literature, the Arts, Numinosity, Culture, Humor, Nerdiness, Inspiration, Creativity, and Storytelling.
Are we doing input-output this time?
I haven't really been doing anything, so...
All right. All right. Welcome back, everybody. As you may have guessed from that idiotic introduction that I did, we are going to be talking about Star Trek, which is just like super nerd status when you start talking about Star Trek.
Yes.
We're talking about the original series, actually. I'm definitely a purist. I really watched the original series. And interesting trivia note, the original series came out in 1966. I also came out in 1966. I was born the same year that Star Trek was. Yeah, we share a birthday. So Star Trek and I are both 53 years old.
Mm.
I know that's not the dumb thing for a lady to show her age in public, but I don't care.
Should I share my age too, just so that we're even?
Yeah. Go ahead, sure.
I'm 27.
I'm 27.
I'm not old. Yeah.
That's right.
Just turned 27 a couple days ago.
That's right. 27.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm. Yep. One of the best days of my life, that day, 27 years ago.
Aw.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the best days of my life, too.
Okay. So, I mean, and it's a really good series, and obviously I didn't watch it in its original run because I was too young, but it's one of those series that immediately syndicated and became enormously popular in syndication. It was just, I just remember growing up, it was pretty much always on TV. You could always find an episode of Star Trek somewhere, like on Saturday morning or on some random weeknight, you know, on some TV channel. And, you know, and so that's how my brothers and I watched it, was just in syndication. I don't have a sense from growing up of season by season, but once I got a set of DVDs, I was able to, you know, parse all that out.
Yeah.
But, so I remember, doing the Star Trek test on you guys, when, Star Trek turned 40 in 2006. And I thought, I think these kids are old enough to try this. And so I remember going to the library and getting the Star Trek DVDs. So yeah, so DVD. So we watched them, and much to my delight, you children all, you know, really enjoy Star Trek.
The first episode that I remember seeing was called What Are Little Girls Made Of? And it's in the first season. And basically what it's about is this scientist who is making android replicas of people of prominent figures in the universe, starting with Captain James T. Kirk. And yeah, I remember it was really weird because they basically had like this giant wheel like a pottery wheel.
Yeah.
In the middle of this room. And it was like, it looked like shaving cream or something on it in the shape of a man. So like a shaving cream gingerbread man was sitting there. And then they would spin the wheel like, oh, it's the wheel of fortune. Okay. It's like a big wheel of fortune. And they spin the wheel and it's going round and round and round. And then it becomes an android replica of whoever you want it to be.
Yeah. And it became Kirk.
Yep.
And he made other androids. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't remember anything about what happened with it or anything. I just remember this giant spinning wheel with a person strapped to it.
Is that the one where the one guy, he was like a giant guy and he could imitate voices, and didn't he like lure one of the red shirts into the cavern? And tell about that.
I think he would mimic people's voices. Somebody, I don't remember who, fell into a pit in the on the planet.
Well, it was a guy with a red shirt.
Oh, red shirt. Yep.
one of the red shirts, one of the security detail, whose function is to, you know, fall down, you know, into chasms, or, you know, get ejected out into space, or be disintegrated by a ray gun, or be mauled to death by a monster. That was what you know, the guy in the red shirt. That was his job.
Have you seen? It's a meme where it's a picture of Captain Kirk on a planet and there are three security guards with him and he's pointing off into the distance and the subtitle says, go and dig three holes over there. I'll explain later.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah. That's pretty funny.
So nice. That's an episode, that's the first episode I ever saw. Not necessarily one of my favorite episodes, but...
It's just the one you remember. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one of my favorite episodes, and this one is widely regarded as one of the best episodes, is called City on the Edge of Forever. Mm-hmm. And it stars Joan Collins as Edith Keeler. And it's such amazing science fiction. And it involves time travel. And the summary of the episode is that the Enterprise is somewhere over a planet and there's a bad storm or something. And I think they go down to the planet to investigate the cause of this terrible magnetic, you know, disturbance or whatever. And they discover this ancient time portal. And she's been waiting for eons for people to come, and it starts playing the history of Earth, you know. And they something about McCoy accidentally injected himself with some horrible is that why they went down to the planet?
Yeah, he went crazy, right, and beamed himself down there.
That's right.
And then while they were there checking out the portal, he hopped through, and then history got changed somehow.
And
so
they have to go and find
McCoy, who's crazed in the past.
That's right, because the Enterprise winked out of existence.
Running around the streets, harassing random homeless people.
Yeah, and they had to do it because they realized that the Enterprise had winked out of existence, and they realized that McCoy had done something in the past of Earth that rendered the future null and void, and so they had to go back in and find him. And it's a really, really good episode. Yeah. It's got so much... one of the things I often wonder about, how did they get so much heart and so much authentic emotion of all kinds, humor, you know, pathos, you know, sad. It's sad. It's a sad episode. It ends. It's one of those episodes that, remember we were talking about the types of endings of stories?
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the unequivocally happy ending where they achieve their goal and they learn what they need to learn and their character and they go through a positive character arc, remember?
Yeah.
And then there's the odious ending, the unequivocal ending. It is a disaster. This is a cautionary tale for sure, or it's just meant to depress you or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then there's the middle of the road ending where they accomplish their exterior mission, but the wound remains. The character's wound
still remains. But at what cost?
At what cost? You know, they maybe didn't, you know, they achieved their goal, but at a great cost. And that is the type of ending that this this episode is, City on the Edge of Forever. And this is from the first season.
Yeah.
This show was firing on all cylinders with this episode. It was amazing.
Oh, man. So I wonder who wrote that one. Do you know?
No. I'll look it up real quick, though. I don't remember. If I had scored higher than Commander, I would have.
If you were an admiral, you'd know.
Yeah, I would know. So why don't I go ahead and look it up, and you can talk about our next.
Yeah, yeah, that episode, The City on the Edge of Forever, it's shocking because, what they have to do to save the future is completely different from what they thought they'd have to do. And, there's definitely a, jaw-dropping moment. You're like, no!
It says here, the episode, writers control to the finished product. Harlan Ellison is one of the writers.
He's
a famous science fiction writer, but also DC Fontana, Dorothy Fontana, also wrote it, and then other people were involved. They're credited with various stages of it.
Okay.
So Harlan, I thought it was a famous science fiction author who had written, who was the main writer on it. Yeah, Harlan Ellison. The author of Repent, Repent, Said the TikTok Man.
Let's see.
Interesting title for a short
story. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Just thinking about the app now.
Let's talk about the actors for a moment, because this show was career-making for a lot of them.
Yeah. I was going to say, I saw an interview with Leonard Nimoy on just last night. I was watching it. He said that after Star Trek, he was never out of work. He did a lot of, turns out that the reason he sort of disappeared from the screen right after Star Trek is because he did disappear from the screen. He went and did a lot of stage work, apparently.
Oh, wow. Many
plays and musicals. Yeah. Yeah. Very well-known plays and musicals. Yeah. And he did some TV shows. In a show, he played the husband of Golda Meir, for example, in a show. And I think he was nominated for an Emmy for that. Star Trek was a big career making move for him, because if you watch the biography that was made of Leonard Nimoy by his son, Adam. It talks a lot about how what Nimoy was doing up until that point was mostly just guest spots on TV shows. You know, he would work for, a few days at a time, and then that would be it. Then he would be having to work other jobs just to support the family. And he finally had his first steady job was Star Trek. And it was a big, obviously a career making show for Shatner too.
Yeah.
He went on to be much more visible on the screen than Nimoy did. He was at the various shows. I love Shatner, and I love Leonard Nimoy does a funny imitation of William Shatner, who I've heard described Shatner as the king of overacting for no apparent reason. you can see, and Nimoy goes, and he has all this energy and this staccato delivery and pausing arbitrarily, but Nimoy greatly admired him because he like you said, he brought so much energy to the set. And I really enjoy honestly Shatner's performances as Kirk. He's really
absolutely
good.
He's
weren't you telling me about what brought on that sort of style of acting for Shatner at some point?
I believe he also did some stage stuff before Star Trek, and the story, I'll have to look it up or something, but as I remember it, he was an understudy for Hamlet. And one night he had to go on as the understudy, and he knew the lines, but they weren't like there immediately as he was saying them. Like, it didn't just come off of his tongue. He had to think of what they were. So that was why he would pause a lot. Like, speak the speech as I said it to you, trippingly on the tongue,
as I'm thinking of it.
Yes, as I'm thinking of what to say. But then he got, it was an awesome review. They were like, and this understudy was amazing. So much energy and just the power behind his words or something. I don't know, but it stuck.
Yeah. It stuck.
It was well, this is the way I act now.
I mean, there's some of the way, it's just like, it's so near, and you can't imagine Kirk being played any other way. Although he has been played Kirk has been played by other people quite effectively.
Oh, yeah.
But we'll get to that in a minute. So another thing that would be fun to talk about were some of our favorite moments in Star Trek. Yes. Oh, wait, you know what? Let's talk about favorite episodes, though. Just list a few more, okay?
Sure. Yeah.
Like if you were to, if someone were to ask you, okay, I'm going to start watching Star Trek. Which episodes should I watch? Ooh. I would say absolutely watch. I think you got to watch Man Trap, right?
Like the one with the salt lady,
the salt sucking monster. Yeah, you got to watch that.
Oh yeah,
City on the Edge of Forever.
Yeah.
Mirror, Mirror, the one where they accidentally get transposed into an evil version of the universe.
Yes.
And
and they have to pretend to be evil. That's great. Yeah.
Yeah, the good guys have to pretend to be evil in the evil universe. Mm-hmm. There's another great episode called Amok Time.
Oh yeah.
AMOK, Amok. You know, things run amok. Mm-hmm. And that was I believe the author of that episode is Theodore Sturgeon, another great science fiction author. But that episode is iconic because it brings in all sorts of really interesting stuff about Vulcan culture, including the famous live long and prosper hand gesture, which Leonard Nimoy invented.
It's some sort of Jewish thing, right?
It is.
Nimoy and Shatner are both Jewish.
They are. And Nimoy remembers this very well from his childhood. This is the Hebrew letter Shin, which is the first letter of the word Shaddai and the first letter of the word Shekhinah.
And Shalom.
Maybe. Yeah, possibly. I don't know Hebrew. All I know is what I've heard Leonard Nimoy say about the letter Shin. Anyway, that stuck, big time. There's some other great episodes.
Amok Time. That's the one where the door slides open while they're talking, and it's just like Mr. Spock goes, "What is this?" And then soup just flies into the wall.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's
the nurse was trying Spock, to be nice.
Yeah, because Spock is not feeling well. He's being called back to the planet Vulcan to complete a betrothal.
Yep.
It's chemical. It's hormonal. Mm-hmm. It's biological. He's like a salmon who must swim upstream or die. Mm-hmm. He's got to go back to Vulcan.
Yeah. Didn't he go into a fugue state and change their course to head to Vulcan?
I believe so.
And later they're like, "Yeah, why did you do that?" And he says, "I guess I did. I don't remember it."
Yeah. 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 So that's a great episode because it brought in. Got to see all sorts of. Great Vulcan culture and everything. Mm-hmm. What are some other ones? I like the one about where Kirk splits into two, his good side and his bad side.
Oh yeah. Oh, what is that one called?
I can't remember it. I can't remember the title of that one. There's another one. There's another great one called The Wolf in the Fold.
Mm-hmm.
Which is about this sort of fear monster that just goes around going into people and driving them bananas.
Is that the one that there was the voice actor who played Piglet was like a lawyer?
Yeah, the voice actor of Piglet is in that that episode.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So that's great.
What was it? He was going. He said he was like die horribly, die. Ah! You are die horribly, die. Oh man.
And then and how can we forget some of our greatest moments? Not necessarily the greatest episodes, but there's an episode called Plato's Stepchildren, which is about the people who are on this planet and they've mastered the art of like people, they're like puppeteers, they can make people do things, right? And they get control of the crew of the Enterprise who are down there on the planet, and they make them do things, and they make Spock sing this horrible song. Remember that?
Yep.
It's the one that ends with something about leaving nothing but bitter dregs.
Yeah.
And that had a profound effect on our family.
Yes.
Because one of the things that we're doing, any of us, at any time, is sitting down to a dish of a certain food and not singing that song. Okay, so I'm gonna do the song that that we always do.
Oh boy!
When we eat a certain dish in our house, it goes like this: Ah, scrambled eggs. It's impossible. It's impossible. Yeah. That just ruined scrambled eggs. Just in the same way that no one in my family ever orders a Chardonnay or asks for a Chardonnay. We always ask for a sharp knife.
Right. Yes. And you can't just say the words scrambled eggs. You got to sing it.
Yeah. Scrambled eggs.
Chicken legs.
Another great episode was, it's not called this. The title of the episode is Spock's Brain.
Right.
But we call it Spock's Garage. This is the costuming of that. Grab that for us, Hannah.
Oh yeah, so Spock's brain gets stolen by this civilization of women who they need a highly evolved brain to power their supercomputer. So they come up to the ship and they knock everybody out. They steal Spock's brain, and which led to the iconic line that that Bones says, which is his brain is gone. and so they have to go down to get to this planet to retrieve Spock's brain, but they bring Spock with them, and he has this little like headset that controls his nerves so that he can walk,
and they work him by remote control.
And for some reason they have him dressed in this like in this horrible army green jumpsuit. And he totally looks like he's some sort of mechanic at an auto shop. So we call this episode Spock's Garage because of that. And there's this meme. It's one of my favorite memes of all time, but it's from that episode where Mr. Spock is standing there with his little headset in the middle of this hallway. And basically they were captured by these women and they escaped. But the women had put like these belts on them that were kind of like shock collars. And so they got caught and she hits the button and they all like, no, and start writhing in pain and stuff. And there's this awesome like screenshot of Kirk and McCoy and Scotty like writhing on the ground, sinking on their knees and stuff. And Mr. Spock just standing there. And the subtitle is "Someone who's never seen Star Trek caption this photo," and the next, the reply is "Mr. Spock is not impressed by the Wiggles." And so that's on our social media. I just put it up there, applauding the brilliance of whoever came up with that, because that never ceases to amuse me.
Yeah, that's really good. That's really good. Yeah. I love that one. Yeah. And there's another episode which this episode I'm about to talk about is an example of how the show looks really dated, and this episode really suffered a bit from the era in which it was made. You're in the hippie era, because there's an episode called I think it's called The Way to.
We always call it
the Space Hippies. We always just call it the Space Hippies episode, because it literally is these sort of utopian, go back to nature, space hippies who are searching for this planet called Eden, which is this non-technological paradise where they can live, a totally natural life away from, spaceships and artificial food and whatnot.
Yeah.
And it turns out that they're actually led by a madman. And the episode breaks into a number of unfortunate musical numbers. It's still a really good episode.
Yep.
Shall we sing one? I don't remember all the songs, but I remember.
I remember.
All right, let's do it.
Too much of all of the songs.
Okay.
All right,
stepping out to
Eden. Yay, brother. Heading into Eden. Yay, brother. I'm going to keep going. No more trouble in my body or my mind. Gonna live like a king on whatever I find. Eat all the fruit and throw away the rind. Yay, brother.
Yay, brother.
Oh, and they set off that that supersonic blast so that they could all escape.
And then while you see members of the Star Trek crew, the Enterprise crew just falling unconscious and writhing on the ground, you know, they have this pleasant, gonna go back to Eden. Yay, brother. And there's like, I love that juxtaposition of this peaceful, nice song over this mayhem going on. On the every deck of the ship.
Yeah.
I thought that was an interesting filmmaking technique. Mm-hmm. I liked that.
Yeah. It sort of gives you the impression that like something is off.
Yeah. Exactly. You know? It's a juxtaposition of something really sweet and nice, you know, with something really horrible. You know, I mean, they used to do that a lot on the X-Files. Mm. There was a episode in the fourth season called Home, which featured the brutal beating to death by baseball bat of this family by these horrible villains in the show. Mm-hmm. And it was, and the song playing over that scene was this pleasant Johnny Mathis tune. Yeah, exactly.
I remember that.
Exactly. And so that's an interesting, you know, filmmaking technique to kind of contrast those two things. Mm. So even though they realized that that guy was basically nuts, mm-hmm. What Spock has this interesting line where he says, you know, there is no madness in what they seek. Mm-hmm. They just want a simple life and away from all of this technology and this artificiality of life and everything.
So, and Spock really vibed with them, didn't he?
He totally reached. Mm-hmm. What Star Trek shows is how constraints can really enhance your artistic creativity. Mm. In the case of Star Trek, many of the constraints were imposed upon them. Because they just didn't have the budget for great special effects. And in fact, they didn't have the technology. It just didn't exist. They couldn't do a lot of special effects because they just didn't have the technology for it. They had to do everything by a lot of practical effects, which aren't always very convincing. They had to do a lot of aliens, often ended up being just humanoid type things because, you know, trying to make a really fantastic looking creature look convincing and not like a guy in a suit. That was really cool.
Or like that rock monster that basically just looked like a rug on wheels.
Yeah, a rug slung over an ottoman and then being pushed around. Yeah. But still, and that was a good story too, though.
Yeah.
So if you can get past the very sort of primitive set and the primitive special effects, and just get to the story of Star Trek. It's excellent. It's excellent science fiction. It's true science fiction, you know, a lot of it. Mm-hmm. But their low budget led to very creative solutions to things. You had one.
You're
reading about, right?
Oh, well.
What about the salt shakers?
Oh, yeah, the salt shakers. Yeah. I actually have, there's this book called The Making of Star Trek, written by Gene Roddenberry, and it sort of just describes some funny anecdotes about the making of the show. And one of them was, oh, there it is. Yeah, you've got it. The Making of Star Trek by Stephen E. Whitfield and Gene Roddenberry. And I paged through this book, and it's actually quite hilarious. There's a lot of fun stories in there. One of them is about that episode we were talking about before, Man Trap, about the salt-sucking monster. Mm-hmm. And there's a little excerpt of something that Gene Roddenberry said about making this episode. So in the very first show of our first season, The Man Trap, we needed some salt shakers because we had a creature that craved salt. We had a story point which required the creature, disguised in human form, to give himself away when someone passed with a salt shaker on a tray. This posed a problem. What will a salt shaker look like 300 years from now? Our property master went out and bought a selection of very exotic-looking salt shakers. It was not until after he brought them in and showed them to me that I realized they were so beautifully shaped and futuristic that the audience would never recognize them as salt shakers. I would either have to use 20th century salt shakers or else I would have to have a character say, see, this is a salt shaker. So I told Irvin to go down to the studio commissary and bring me several of their salt shakers. And as he turned to go, I said, however, those 8 devices you have there will become Dr. McCoy's operating instruments. For 2 years now, the majority of McCoy's instruments in sickbay have been a selection of exotic salt shakers, and we know they work because we've seen them work. Not only has he saved many a life with them, but it's helped keep hand prop budget costs low.
Yeah, that's an awesome story.
Yeah, so he clearly has a good sense of humor, this Gene Roddenberry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there was another thing, too, that one of the things that they were hoping to do, because, you know, these guys, the crew of the Enterprise is going to be leaving the ship often to go down onto these planets. Hmm. And they just didn't have the budget or the good special effects to show a ship landing, and taking off repeatedly on the surface of a planet. Mm-hmm. So they thought about, what can we do that's like the most, you know, unobtrusive, you know, cheapest, quickest way to get them up and down off this planet. And that's where they thought of the idea of beaming up and out, mm-hmm. you know? And I mean, it was really, really simple. You just had to have the actor stand still for a certain amount of time.
Yep.
And then they had the sparkly special effects go over them. And it was ingenious. And it has become sort of it's one of those things that everyone knows about. People talk about beaming up and beaming down. Mm-hmm. Probably without even realizing that it actually comes from Star Trek. I'm sure there are people who've never even seen Star Trek who know about mm-hmm. that. So that's another example of the constraints of a small budget for that show, really enhancing the creativity of the show. And just as a little hint for anyone out there who's artistic, I mean, sometimes it helps to impose constraints on yourself to jumpstart your own creativity. Like when you've got to work within a certain framework, it can really help you.
I know that from working for a small theater company. We definitely have to cut corners, and sometimes we get really creative ideas from things. Like, I can't tell you how many costumes I've made out of curtains mm-hmm. and bed sheets.
You're like Maria von Trapp.
Exactly, yeah. I clothed an entire French army in bed sheets, for the last show I designed. And they looked pretty spiffy, too.
Pretty good, pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like one of the things that, as a writer, my things that I write, I impose a word count on myself. Mm. And so trying to achieve the story within a certain word count can help you. It prevents you from just going off and, you know, not making any choices and just writing and writing and writing and writing into infinity. So those types of constraints really help. So,
yeah.
I was wondering,
yeah.
Did you find anything else in that book that, I know you did.
Yeah, I did. I was telling you about it earlier, but just a little bit.
I want to hear,
this. It's a little bit longer, but it's just a hilarious example of the kind of stuff that people have entire meetings and back and forths about, and just the sassiness of some of these people as well is hilarious. So in the book, there's a compilation of a series of memos that went back and forth between different people responsible for creating the world. So it goes like this. So this is a memo to Gene Roddenberry from Bob Justman. Dear Gene, I would like to suggest that all proper names for denizens of Mr. Spock's planet Vulcan follow a set routine. To wit, all names beginning with the letters SP and ending with the letter K, all names to have a total of 5 letters in them, no more and no less. Therefore, Mr. Spock aptly fits this pattern. Other names would be as follows. Spook, Spuck, Spack, Speak, Spouk, Spack, Spilk, Spiak, Spunk, Spank, Spink, Spank, Spunk, Spilk, Spalk, Spalk, Spulk, Spulk, Spurk, Spark, Spork, Spurk, Spurk, Spock, Spock, Spurk, Spurk. It goes on and on and on. There's columns and columns. Splack, Splick, Splock, Splock, Splack, Speck, Spick, Spook, Spuck, Spark, Spurk, Spurk, spork, spurk.
Oh man, that is awesome. Says, so this whole the list of he going, can thank goodness they didn't stick religiously to that.
Yeah, no, exactly. More? The last one doesn't even follow his own rules. It's spelled S-P-X-Y-X.
How do you pronounce that?
Yes, in the part of the Vulcan populated by bees mostly.
How did Rod onto the memo from Bob just
okay, so yeah, after that, Bob says, hope that the suggestions are of immense help to you. Then there's a memo. Gene doesn't even respond yet. There's a memo from this guy named Herb Solo, spelled S-O-L-O-W. And he says, dear Gene, in an industry that is founded on the uncontrollable appetite for creativity, it is indeed heartwarming for the management of a major studio to receive a copy of a memo that deals with such an intensely competitive and accurate discussion of proper names on the planet Vulcan. However, with time being of the essence, with our schedule calling for productions of our series to commence in 3 very short weeks, I feel enough time, rather more than enough time, has been spent devising names for Mr. Spock's relatives. With a deep respect for creativity, I feel we should go on to something of greater importance. P.S. Have you thought of the names Spick or Sprick or Sprack or Sprock or Spruck or Spudk or Spidk or Spuck or Spisk or Splask or Speak or Spask or any of the other 78 I have already devised? P.P.S. Please refer to Mr. Justman's May 3rd memo, and you will find the 5th name in the column 1 is the same as the 6th name in column 3. I understand that you science fiction people with your technical jargon have a word to describe this happening. It is known as a mistake. P.P.P.S. What do you say if all the people on the planet Vulcan are lawyers? Interesting idea. And they all have a firm name like Spook, Speak, Spork, Spilk, and Roddenberry. The last name is necessary to keep the audience aware at all times that this relates to science fiction. P.P.P.P.S. Also note that in the May memo, the 8th name in column 2 is the same as the 8th name in column 4. Also, the 10th name in column 2 is the same as the 9th name in column 4. There are probably others, but my time is too valuable to waste pointing out that the 7th name in column 1 is the same name as the 3rd name in column 2.
Oh,
that's,
man.
That's his memo. Then,
okay. Oh, there's more?
There's a, yeah. Gene Roddenberry hasn't even answered yet. This is just stuff to him. Basically, these two guys, Herb Solo and Bob Justman, like just sending Gene memos.
So this is like the 1960s office. This is like one of those out of control email threads. It just keeps going and going and going. And everyone's CC'd on it. Everyone's reading going, what the heck? And this is like in the 1960s, his memos are just back and forth, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll continue.
Okay, here's the next one. This is Herb Solo, the guy who we just heard from. This is to Herb Solo from Bob Justman, the guy who came up with the lists. He says, dear Mr. Solo, I refer to your memo dated May 5th, 1966. Any Vulcanite or science fiction aficionado would know that the 5th name in column 1, Spauk, is pronounced Spook, whereas the 6th name in column 3, Spauk, is pronounced Spauk. The 8th name in column 2, Spurk, is pronounced Spirk, whereas the 8th name in column 4, Spirk, is pronounced Spirk. Also, the 10th name in column 2, Spork, is pronounced Spark, whereas the 9th name in column 4, Spork, is pronounced Spork. Also, the 7th name in column 1, Spilk, is pronounced Spilk, whereas the 3rd name in column 2, Spilk, is pronounced Spielk. Consider yourself chastised. Your friend, Bob. And there's more.
Oh, okay.
To Robert Justman from John D.F. Black. Dear Bob, I refer to your memo dated May 6th, 1966, regarding Mr. Solo's memo dated May 5th, 1966, especially pertaining to the paragraph 3 of your note. I certainly take no issue with your reference to the 10th name in column 2, Spork, being pronounced Spark. This, of course, is common knowledge. However, I am forced to raise some question in regard to your whereas. By this, I mean the 9th name in column 4, Spork, as being pronounced Spork. The 4th Spork as being pronounced Spark. The proper pronunciation of the 9th name in column 4, Spork, is in fact Spork, rather than Spork. Unless, of course, you are one of those infected by the current trends toward excessive use of jargon and common usage. I sincerely hope you will take this slight criticism in the spirit in which it is intended. Yours sincerely, John D.F. 2. John D.F. Black from Herb Solo. As you will learn, I make it a practice not to get involved in the private squabbles between members of a particular production unit. However, I feel it necessary to throw caution to the wind and strongly and publicly take issue with your unkind criticism of our Bobby Justman. Our Bobby has been with this company for almost a year. How someone who is new to our shores and who uses Dorothy Fontana's initials between his two names can rise up and publicly strike out at our Bobby is beyond the realm of serious thought by the management of the studio. This is especially disastrous in that your reasoning for taking to task our Bobby is bad reasoning. Those of us who have discarded our rose-colored glasses and who see life as life is meant to be seen know, in fact, that the proper pronunciation of the 9th name in column 4, Spork, is not Spork and is not Spark, but is in fact a throwback to a German company that manufactured Christmas cookies and is pronounced with a silent F and is therefore spelled S-F-P-O-R-K. Sure, Bob Justman is wrong, but if he doesn't understand the SF factor in Vulcan proper names, he should be publicly chastised, and I am surprised that you have not taken it upon yourself to be slightly critical of whatever his name is. Don't ask me how they still managed to get their work done. I've observed these people for almost 2 years now, and I still don't understand it.
Oh, man. Yeah, because they spent a lot of really long memos.
Yes, exactly. They spent a long time just, you know, trying to think of witty things to say to each other.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but yeah, again, it is. It's like one of these ridiculous sort of inter-office, you know, email threads or a text, mm-hmm. group text that just keeps going back and forth, you know, a meme Gosh. War of some kind. Wow. That was funny. That was so funny.
Spick, spark, spick, splack, yeah. splope, yeah. spunk, splank, nick.
Splank, nick. Yeah, splanch.
Splanch.
Yeah, splanch. Would that work? S-P-L-A-N. Oh, that's how
well, it doesn't end with a K. It would have to be splank.
Splank. Well, that's how we pronounce it.
Splank.
Splank. That would yep. work.
So but of course you have to put the silent F in there, so it would phonetically be splank.
Splank. Splank. So that would be Spock's third cousin three times removed. Splank.
Exactly. As everyone knows. Splank. Oh my gosh.
Excellent. Excellent. As you can see, crazy. We take this show extremely seriously.
Oh yes.
You know, we would be remiss if we didn't mention the movies.
Yes.
Movies which are great. The movies using the cast of the original series, those are all really, really amazing. Mm-hmm. I really love all of them. The first one and the fifth one are known to be the greatest. Yeah. The second, third, and fourth, I think, are really good.
Yeah.
And then the second movie, Wrath of Khan, mm-hmm. that's one movies just movies
it's
based on one of the best episodes actually from the series. The mm-hmm. the episode is called Space Seed, and it's got Ricardo Montalban playing Khan in mm-hmm. the episode and in the movie. It's so great that he was able to do that role.
Yeah,
it's really good. And then I did quite enjoy the reboot, the modern versions of the movies that they made. Mm-hmm. Let's see, when did those come out? I believe it was 2014, 2000, something
somewhere
like that.
Around
where yeah, Christopher Pine is playing Captain Kirk, and Zachary Quinto is playing mm-hmm. Spock. Simon Pegg is playing Scotty. Carl Urban is playing Bones, and Zoe Saldana. Yeah, really, really good. I especially enjoyed the first one. I thought they did a really good job rebooting that movie, that franchise, and that story. And then there's another one we've mentioned this before, where sometime during the coronavirus lockdown, I discovered this. It's a fan created set, 11 episodes.
How many episodes you cut out there?
It's 11. They did 11 episodes between 2013 and 2017. They crowdfunded this to produce 11 episodes. It's called Star Trek Continues, and it's on YouTube. You just get it. They've just uploaded it up there. And it's what's really interesting about this is that, unlike some of the other sort of reboots of Star Trek, even using the same characters, Kirk and Spock, it's done exactly imitating the style of the original series from 1966 through 1969. Mm-hmm. Sets are made to match exactly. The lighting is the same. The sound effects. They even use the music. There might be some original music for some of the episodes, but they definitely reuse a lot of the same music. And the actors who play the various roles, they really do a good job of kind of inhabiting the character that Shatner and Nimoy and DeForest Kelly and
James Doohan
created. And in fact, the person who plays Scotty is the son of James Doohan.
Yep, you can see the resemblance.
And you look at it, and you're like, yeah, it's really super. And it's I highly recommend it. It's kind of like, you know, it really is like finding some lost episodes of the original series, because it's so sad that it only went for 3 seasons, because it just didn't catch on while it was in production. It only caught on in a big way after it had been canceled and went into franchise or syndication. But so these 11 episodes done in the style, I mean, after a while, you kind of forget that you're watching different actors play these roles.
Yeah.
So it's really good. Really enjoyed it. Highly recommended. I'm really glad we got a chance to talk about, I just love the original world so much, despite its dippy 60s, look and hair and costuming and music and everything.
Yay, brother.
I really reach, I really dig it. And I'm glad you like it too. And you know, everybody listening, we hope you like it too. If you've never seen Star Trek, the original series, I'm sure it's on various, online platforms. I got the original DVDs just from the library. I'm sure you can do that. I ended up purchasing them. You can purchase the DVDs. So I highly recommend it. It's a really good, really good TV show from 53 years ago. Yes, dated. Yes, but excellent. It's all about the story and the characters. So, yeah. And evidently all about the names of Spock's various relatives as well.
Very important. Very important.
That was so great. All right. Well, Hannah, shall we sign off?
And yes, let's do.
All right. Well, everybody, we thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and we will see you next time. Everybody, live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.
Bye. Bye. Take care.